Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another exciting night of Fandom Excess. I am your ever-faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. And look, Karen is here already, so I don't have to babble tonight.
Hello, AJ, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Happy Tuesday. Happy podcast.
Yep. So I
guess
Jamie is
week.
Running a little behind tonight, so we're going to start with the dreaded 100.
The dreaded 100.
Dreaded.
Yeah, the 100. There are four more episodes
awful
after tonight, right? This was
uh-huh
episode number 12.
12.
Yeah. I'm not sure which parts of this show I hate more, honestly. I did not think this was so the best part is when it focuses on John and Amori, right? They are now the best characters on the show. I mean,
yeah.
John has always been a great character. And when they're on, the whole Shade Hada thing, just becomes more and more ridiculous every week, right? Like, this character is so I just can't wait for that to be over. And then Bellamy is so, like, we're going to have to recap, basically we'll be rehashing last week's conversation, because this week did nothing for me to understand what the writers are doing with Bellamy. And so I didn't really like much of it, except, you know, I mean, we can see where John's storyline goes maybe in the next, like, John is finally becoming the man that, like, we always want him to be, that Amori always, like, this is, you know, like, he's becoming a leader finally, and, like, caring about, like, John's evolution is almost complete now. He'll probably die.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm worried he's gonna, like, give his life for other people, which would be the ultimate, like, end of Murphy's storyline, I guess, right? That he always looked out for himself. He's looking out for others. I like it. I mean, I like to see,
yeah,
John's, you know, arc going that way. That's maybe the only part of the show I like now.
There was,
although I did like all the girls being, like, mean to Bellamy.
There was one thing I did like about the episode. Quite a bit. I liked the way the episode started. Shade Hayden got rid of a third of our cast.
Yes. Yeah, I noticed
that. Children
yeah
and Gabriel are gone. Most of Russell's followers are gone in that one fail swoop, which I really, really appreciated that. I was so glad, because that was fine. I remember last season, you and I kept saying how we hoped that they blew up the spaceship because that would get rid of so many characters. And then that's not what happened. They brought them all down. And we just have, you know,
yeah,
all these factions again. And it's
yeah
the same story all over again. So for Shade Hater to get rid of one of those factions, I was so excited. It felt so good to be rid of them.
Yep.
You know, I guess I'm a terrible person for saying that, but I don't care. It's just too much going on, you know, and we still got to deal with Baby Dios, as you like to call her. So
yeah,
it's just, it was kind of refreshing to get rid of some people. I completely agree about Bellamy. You know, there's actually a part of me that hopes this whole last war bullshit story that they got going, part of me hopes it's real and that Bellamy's actually on the right side of it. Because, yeah, at least that way, you know, if Bellamy's actually right, then he's not such a dupe. But, like Clark said, you know, it doesn't even matter. You know, maybe you're right, but guess what? At what cost? You know, I'm really glad Clark called him out on exactly what we were saying prior to her saying it, which was, you know, you can believe all you want, but you just betrayed your family. You betrayed everybody and everything that your entire life has been about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so Clark was a welcome presence in this episode. I mean, we have bemoaned all season the absence of Bellamy, but Clark has really been absent for much of
yes.
much of the middle third especially, like those middle five episodes especially, were very lacking in Clark, right? And she hasn't done much. And so I, you know, it was nice to see her. And, you know, the way she was with Bellamy was great. Although my favorite part of the entire episode, my favorite line is like the last line of the episode when Clark bloops in through the stone and she goes, "What the hell happened here?" And I'm like, oh my God, that's how I feel about this entire show right now. Like, what the hell happened to my show?
Actually, that wasn't the line. That was the next to last line. The last line was when John said,
long story, or, you know, funny you should ask, or something like that. He says, yeah, John has a one-liner there.
I don't remember exactly what he said, but even still, the Bellamy stuff is just so upsetting. And that's the whole thing. Like, this whole thing, like, I think it's pretty obvious, at least to us, because we're so used to it, because it's so cliche, but I don't think Bill practices what he preaches. Because I started thinking about it, because you can see Bellamy's weird, because he's a true believer, but he's still trying to help his friends. He doesn't want them to, but he will sacrifice them if they don't do what he wants. So it's like, Bellamy's like a crossbreed of the believers. But, that got me thinking about Bill. He's this, you know, cult leader, he's got everybody believing all this crap and everything. You know, but yet, the first thing he says through everything, you know, is he asks about Callie. Why do you give a shit about Callie? Your daughter, in your eyes, betrayed you, probably killed your son, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it's like he, you know, if you are so, in, you know, you want everybody to think that none of that matters, and, you know, get, you know, release yourself from personal relationships and everything, why do you keep bringing up Callie?
All cult leaders sort of like all talk and you know, like, I shouldn't say all cult leaders, but I mean, it's kind of obvious that he's a cult leader who his goal is to, like, have his own ego stroked and have people worship him, not to, you know, and to be right. He wants to be right more than he wants to really, like, save humanity. I think he just wants to be right. I mean, we know that he can't. So this idea that Bellamy's like, "I'm right, Clark, you just have to trust me." I mean, there's a part of that where I'm like, gee, like, how many times has Clark said, has someone on the show said, "Oh, you just have to trust me," and they're supposed to go with it. But we know Bellamy is wrong, because we saw the backdoor pilot, which was like the origin story of Bill being the shepherd, like where this all came from. And we know what a jerk he is, and that he's not a good guy, and that he, you know, like, basically killed his wife, you know, basically, like, was a jerk to his entire, you know, I mean, I don't have to recap that. We saw all of that, and we know that he's not a good guy. And so that's one reason why I believe that ultimately he, you know, it's not going his way. And there's, you know, no one has ever brought up that bit from a couple episodes ago where, what's Monty's kid's name? The annoying, ever annoying Jordan. Is that his name?
Yeah.
What's his name? Jordan, is that his name?
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. Jordan, where he's like, oh, maybe it's based on Korean, and works up this whole theory that, like, you know, they're wrong. It doesn't mean the last war. It means, like, I forget what he says it means. And it's never mentioned again, and he's never brought it up to anyone, and no one ever sort of talked about it, but I have to believe that that is going to, like, they didn't, I mean, I have to believe the writers didn't just throw that in there by accident for no reason, right? I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in these writers, but that seems like a very obvious thing that's going to come back around.
Which is exactly why they haven't brought it up again, so they can kind of do that, oh yeah, remember that thing? Type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They like to do those things.
Yeah. So, I mean, Bellamy, we discussed this last week, but I just have a hard time seeing Bellamy buy into all this. And he's, you know, he's trying to say, he's like, I had this transcendent vision that changed me. It changed everything for me. And I just, Echo pointed out in this episode that she spent, it was either Echo or, no, I think it was,
yeah, it was,
or Hope said, I spent 5 years training to become one of them, and then I spent 3 more years, like, preparing to fight for them. I know everything about them. And, like, they never fell for it. But,
right.
You know, Bellamy has a vision that he doesn't even really spend that long trying to interpret any. I mean, I guess if seeing is, I mean, I guess there are viewers for whom this works because Bellamy saw it, but I kind of was waiting for Octavia to shout out all the things we said last week. Like, you saw Mom. Mom was, like, made you when you were, like, 5 years old, babysit the little, like, Mom took your whole life away from you when you were five by making you, like, guard Octavia under the floor, right?
You know, I thought, like, actually what they did was, like, all the talking, and then when Bellamy looked at Octavia, all she turned her back to him, which I thought was pretty telling in itself. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, and, you know, speaking of, you know, all the things with Bellamy, and Echo brought up, you know, some good points to him too. She's like, you know, I spent 5 years, I spent the last 5 years, and then 3 months to save you, and then to get revenge for you, and betray us. Like, it's just like, how do you justify
that? That was cold. Yeah. I don't see how Bellamy,
I can't believe that Bellamy's got some grandmaster plan and he needs to fake it out and make it seem like that's not it. All right. You can't betray them in such a way and then be like,
he can't, because we already saw that. We already saw someone with a fake, you know, we already saw Echo and Octavia fake out Hope with a fake plan of being, like, faking it that they were believers.
Right.
Like, we can't see that again. That will be so annoying. I think he's a real believer, and I think he's going to be, I think he's going to be
dead.
Sorry.
I think he's going to be dead. I think at the last minute, whatever happens, and he's going to realize, holy shit, I've been duped. I can't believe I bought into this. And then he's going to give his life to save somebody else, whether it's Clark or Octavia or Echo. He's dying to save somebody because he's going to realize that he fucked up.
And it's going to suck for a character who has been, like, so defined for years by his loyalty and love for these people. And particularly these women, particularly the two, you know, female leads, to have betrayed them for, you know, it also, you know, we don't really see him waver. I mean, we kind of do, like, when Octavia turns her back on him, we do see, you know, the pain. We see some pain in him, but we don't really see him waver. To be confronted with Clark and Echo, and especially Octavia, you know, Echo's relationship with Bellamy is less well developed because it all happened off screen, right? Like, there's a time jump in there together, and I believe it because the show's put it there, but I haven't seen it. Like I don't feel it the way I feel his love for the other two. And for him to have, like,
right.
I guess I'm not really seeing it. Like, when he says, take them down to be tortured, you know, take them down to M's, whatever they call it. You know, and then he says to Clark, it didn't have to be this way. Which is, like, I hate when characters say that. I hate when people say that in life. Because what you're saying is, like, you should have given up, right? When you say it didn't have to be this way, if I say it didn't have to be this way, AJ, what I mean is, like, AJ, you should have rolled over the first time I asked you, right? And then for Clark to say, yes, it did, you know,
was
pretty,
awesome, that was awesome. I don't know what I was going to say. Oh, you know what the other problem with Bellamy is, the way they did it? Bellamy has never been shown to have mommy issues. So to use his mother as this reason for his eye-opening experience, it falls shallow because he's never had mommy issues. There's never been a moment where it's, you know, Octavia does. We've been through that with Octavia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But never once with Bellamy.
No, I mean, if we'd seen, I mean, we did see Pike for like one sec, you know, barely at all in his hallucinations last week. Like for him to see Pike, maybe for him to see Kane, like Kane was much more of a fathery kind of Kane or Jaha or Pike. Not that they're father figures, but they were leader figures. Or for him to see, like, I think he has like two dead girlfriends in the past, right? Like, who are barely memorable. But, like, surely there are other people that he could have, I mean, even Abby, like, you know, to have seen, I mean, not that Abby would make sense, but like there are other characters on the show
more
that might have made more sense. Yes, you're absolutely right to mention that. Like,
you know who
haven't seen him. Who?
You know who I could have? If he had seen this person, I could have totally been on board that Bellamy was a believer. Monty. Because Monty was always the one trying to find a better way, stop killing each other. I mean, Monty, I mean, essentially was Bill without a cult. You know, Monty's always trying to find a better way. You know, to the point where, you know, they lived their life and gave up their life to find a life for everybody else, you know. So, had he seen Monty in the vision, he'd be more inclined to say it at least makes sense.
To see his mother is not, they barely ever mention her. The only time that Bellamy really talks about her is when he talks to Octavia about Octavia's issues with her mother, keeping her under the floor, right? Yeah. I mean, it's really problematic to see Bellamy be so 100% in this cult, which, I mean, let's face it, it's a cult, right? And that when someone says, by the way, Bellamy, you know what happens? You turn into an ice crystal person. And he doesn't even say, like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, he just, like, right? Like, I think it's Octavia who says that. Someone says to him, if we lose, we turn into, like, ice crystal people. We got to get out of here. And he doesn't even say, like, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, which I guess when you're in a cult, you don't really, I mean, maybe it's like, I don't know what it's like when you're in a cult, but I feel like maybe it's true that people in a cult don't listen to anything, but it just makes no sense to me. And Bellamy's not even like a real believer, because this idea that like you shouldn't love anyone and that's how you love all of mankind, by not forming attachments. And he's so defined by his attachments to people. It's just not even like, never mind whether Bellamy'd be able to even do it. I don't believe he'd want to do it. Like, Bellamy is a real believer, I think, in, like, intimate, one-on-one, you know, like, he's totally driven by love, right? His entire being is driven by his love for his sister and his best friend, and also now his girlfriend. You know, even more so than the way Clark is driven by, like, what she'll do to save her people, like, her people writ large. Bellamy is about saving his people writ small, like the small, like the individuals that he loves. Whereas Clark's trying to save a civilization. He's just trying to save individuals always. I feel like, right? Like, and for him to like, I don't, because he saw like a vision of his mother, some like, and the, like this thing, the war to end all wars, is just like, I mean, like how many times, just in like the last 100 years, have we had a war to end all wars, right? We've had at least two wars to end all wars in the 1900s. It's bothersome. And William, the more William is on screen and the more he talks, the less and less I like him and trust him, right?
Yeah,
like
I mean,
everyone,
we're not supposed to trust him, especially since we saw the backdoor pilot.
But like everyone can see that, I mean, it's so obvious that he's a snake oil salesman. These people are just, So that whole thing is like, I'm glad to see most people back on Sanctum, although, you know, they keeping Raven. So Raven and who's kept Raven, and Raven's not allowed to go home because she knows how to use the stone, right? They were gonna. Who's being kept,
right?
On Bardo?
Gabriel
and Raven. Gabriel's another one that, like, do I care about Gabriel? Like, how did he get to be a main character?
No,
I really, right? I care about Raven, but whatever, Gabriel. He's in like the Nelson category as far as I'm concerned. So I'm glad to see them back go down to Sanctum, but then like we got to deal with Shade Hada, who like, I mean, they built a throne out of skulls. It's so ludicrous. First of all, where'd they get all those skulls in like an hour? You know how long it takes to like scrape flesh off a skeleton and bleach it and build a, right? They made him like an hour.
I know where they got them from. Remember in the castle or the mansion or whatever the hell. Remember that room?
The primes.
All the past, whatever, past primes.
Yeah.
That's where they got the stones.
Ah, smart, AJ. You're so smart. Yeah.
You know what my first
Very
thought
smart.
Was? When I saw his little throne there, my first thought was, he ain't got nothing on the Seven Kingdoms.
No. I know. Yeah.
The Iron Throne is much more impressive.
Yeah. So that guy who used to be Indra's like second or third, or he used to be one of the leaders
Knight.
Of one crew, who now is like Knight, who is now
Shade's
little bitch boy. He's gonna have to die. There was a point at which I thought maybe he would turn, like maybe he's gonna be valuable and be turned, and you know he's not all in. But for him to follow Baby Dioza and build that and everything, he is so like he's bending the knee so far down. Like there's no way that guy gets. I'm worried that Nikki. Go ahead.
Who? Who are you worried
Baby
about?
Dioza. Baby Dioza.
Oh,
I'm worried about her. I'm worried about her becoming like a character and turning and being one of the gang before it's over. I just want her dead.
Nah, I don't think so. She was trying to escape. As soon as John had that little talk with her, she was trying to get out.
Yeah.
But
I'm sorry, but you.
Here's my thing. So they bring in the sphere, and my first thought is, where's Gaia? Because last we saw Gaia, she was laying knocked out on the ground next to the sphere.
Yeah.
And how did they find the
sphere? Oh, she might be on a different planet. Could she be on a different planet also?
No, she didn't go through. Remember the guy from Bardo, he shut the machine off.
Oh, yeah, she never went through.
I'm gonna assume that she like woke up and crawled out of there before they found the sphere. But how exactly did they find the sphere? Because he says I took it upon myself to have Indra followed, actually to have Baby Dioza followed, who was following Indra, and then he comes in with the sphere, and I'm like, what does one have to do with the other? Like nothing.
Right.
I mean, the sphere
didn't go anywhere near. Nobody knows about the sphere. Like, okay, the children of Gabriel knew about it, but they're all dead, right? But I don't, like, does anybody in Tree Crew and Wong Crew know? Nobody in Wong Crew knows about the sphere, and nobody in Allegis, and Russell doesn't, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think they found it by accident. That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. They found it by accident because nobody knows about it.
But
nobody
the way they presented it made it seem like one had something to do with the other because they literally said the thing about having Indra followers, and then they come walking in with the ball. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, because Indra went to the reactor.
Right.
Yeah, it made no sense. And then Russell is like all like, ooh, it's so pretty, and like touching it. Obviously has no idea what it's for. When Clark comes beaming through, they're clearly, like, shocked, right? Like, the whole, like, what? Like, where is this show going right now for the next four episodes?
Well,
I have no idea.
The funniest part about Clark and Bill showing up is, I don't know how Bill survives. I mean, you got to think Shane Hayden can take one look at Bill and just kill him.
I know.
You should help us fight the last war.
Next week is going to be terrible because it's just going to be Russell, Shade Hada, and Bill talking. And they're both so fucking annoying and never shut up. The two of them talk nonstop, and I'm like, shut up every time they're on screen. And now we got the two of them in the same room next week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be like pour a big drink before you turn on this show because those two are going to like talk nonstop. And then...
But here's the thing. Four episodes left. How do we wrap this all up in four episodes?
Well, yeah, and they need to, like, eliminate... I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Russell is going to die. Shade Hada has to die. Like, there's no scenario where Shade Hada becomes, like, their friend and helps them, right? Like, it's so clear that he must die before the end of the season. And if he's not going to die, like Maddie's Arya move, would have made sense for them to just let him die then. I'm not sure how the story is being served at all by him continuing to be alive, except to give Murphy some, like, for some reason they decided to separate Indra and Murphy from Clark, and they had to, like, create up some kind of storyline, I think, to keep them really, I think it's just to keep them busy storyline. Like, I don't see any way this becomes any more interesting or has value. Yeah, I don't like, right? Like, to me, like, they should have just wrapped it up a few weeks ago and let me have a little more development of why Bellamy went off the rails, or why, I don't know, why anything is happening on this show that makes no sense at all.
You know, and we've said every week, it's just they're telling us what they want us to know. They're not, it's not organic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And meanwhile, Gaia's missing. So I don't know, is Gaia going to come in? Like, Gaia's not a killer. Gaia's not like, it's not like on The Walking Dead when Carol's missing and everyone gets captured. You're like, oh yeah, badass Carol's going to come and rescue everyone, right? Like, Gaia is not their Carol. Gaia's not their Carol. No. Gaia's not their Saeed. Gaia's like, I mean, Gaia's a priestess who, you know, is not, I mean, she has some skills, but not. Yeah.
Gaia can devise a plan, though. So
she can.
I can see her coming up with something to free the people that are the killers.
I think Gaia's going
to
do, you know what's going to happen.
So.
I think it's pretty obvious that, I don't know if it's obvious, but my working theory that I just thought up right now is that Clark is going to take Bill to get the flame. But Gaia is the only other person who knows where the flame is. Gaia and Clark buried it together, right?
Right.
And I bet Gaia, like, Clark will go there and it'll be gone. And Clark will be like, "Oh," and, like, Gaia will have taken it for some reason. Maybe they can put it back in Maddie and make Maddie not suck anymore. Because I think Maddie Maddie needs to be off the show also.
But isn't the flame destroyed, though? Like, didn't it, like, it's corrupted because of everything that Shane made it and how they had to rip it out of Maddie.
Yeah, when they ripped it out of Maddie, it broke, right? But they buried it, like, more symbolically, right?
Right.
I mean, Bellamy said, it was Bellamy who's like, well, maybe we can, look at your technology, you can repair it. Like, I mean, these people don't really seem to use AI at all. I mean, okay, so Bill knew Becca back in the day. It's not clear to, and they do have a lot of technology. I don't know really if they could repair the flame or not.
I think it's not going to be there when Clark goes for it. I like your Gaia story, but I have a better thing. So they really didn't bury it.
Oh, okay.
I think the dog ate it. The dog went and dug it up and ate it.
And now the dog has the memory of all the commanders.
There's got to be a reason that they have that dog on the show, and this is it.
Yes. How can that golden retriever still be alive, by the way? Is the dog a prime? Yeah, that dog has been with that. Like, they went into space 300 years ago. Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe the dog ate it. They only buried it, you're right, 3 inches deep. Like, anybody could have it, right? It could,
so,
like, anybody.
Jamie
got
has
it.
Joined us, so I was going to bring her in if we're done with this.
Yeah, I think we're done.
Hi.
Hello, Jamie.
Jamie has joined you for a while. I'm waiting.
No.
I was texting you guys. I finally. That's okay.
I
just, that's why I finally called.
Forward, and I just, I happened to look over. I went, "Ooh, Jamie's here."
Yeah,
and that's a
Jamie
good thing because it gets us to shut up about them instead of just bashing on 100. So.
Yeah, the show that we hate watch.
Yeah. So, well, we can switch over to a show that was actually good this week for a change. I think Wynonna Earp was good this week.
Yeah, I think it was, too.
This might be the best episode. So this was like maybe episode 4 or 5, I think. And I think for me, it was the best episode of the season, I think.
Actually, I'd probably agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like I can finally see a coherent storyline and a plot playing out in a way that
mm-hmm.
I've complained for a couple weeks that stuff was happening that wasn't adequately explained.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like now the story of the season is there. I still have some issues, but I feel like that's there. I felt like it all, like what everybody was doing, everybody's motives are starting to like become a little more clear to
mm-hmm.
me. Of course, the gang is back together, which is so important, right?
That makes a difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And this is part one of the mid-season finale because they're
so
it's off for a while because of them not filming, you know, as soon because the virus.
It's not back till September 9th now,
finished,
so that's like a break, I think, right?
Oh, it's only a 2-week break. I kind of assumed it was more than
September
that.
September 9th.
Honest,
today's,
I didn't look.
Today's September
it
the
might be.
20th. Today's August 25th. September 9th, so there's 6 more
days
left.
We've still got
1
more
the...
left yet before the break. I just was,
are you
I
sure?
didn't realize.
I don't...
It... Yeah, there's 1 more.
Okay,
then
I thought
it won't
my...
be on.
I thought...
think it's, it'll be off for a little bit. They're still filming it. I wouldn't think it would be that quick.
I'm pretty
I didn't
sure.
look at when, but this is a mid-season finale coming up next week, so I have to assume that means it's off for a while.
I'm pretty sure when I saw it today, I watched it on demand today, and I'm pretty sure it said next episode September 9th.
Well, there might be a break maybe before the mid-season finale, if that's what you
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, there's
but
a break, and the
days?
Next episode is not next week. It's September 9th, 2 weeks.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but what I'm saying is then there's a break, like it's the mid-season finale.
Yeah.
It's the next one.
There's
okay,
a break next week. It's not
only...
on next week.
I
no, there's a
mean.
1 week break, then we'll get the mid, then we'll get a break because of COVID.
Yeah, I thought
right?
you were saying that the rest of the season was coming on September 9th. I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
No, the next episode.
Right, I get you now. Yeah, no, yeah,
anyway,
it's been a break for a while. So,
anyway, so
I guess it's all right. in between.
But you like this one too, this episode.
Yeah, so obviously this one's all about what Nicole, the deal she made, which...
well, sort of, yeah.
I don't think they
it's
actually
a bit of a mystery.
The deal yet. But, yeah, okay.
They didn't.
Because she's still throwing up frogs and can't talk, really. I mean, she could talk, but she can't say what it's about.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, every time,
so
she tries
kind of,
to, every time she tries to explain, she vomits a frog, right?
Yeah, which is gross.
Yeah.
But funny. Yeah.
Actually, I thought it was some fairly realistic vomiting, unlike most shows that you
yeah,
see.
Gross.
I was like, oh, that really looks like she's hurling right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very gross. But yeah, it's all about, you know, kind of the deal and how she's they're trying to find a cure for it. And then the other part, of course, is Wynonna trying to get Peacemaker back. The other thing that I was going to say about this one, I was making sure it was this one, it is this one, is that we see Rosita again, which was kind of nice because she hasn't been in for a while. Not that she was in here a whole lot, but...
well, it's nice, but it's not nice because she's horrible and we hate her, right? Like she.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's for the character in general, the actress, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
She's not, per se, wasn't a nice character. She tried to take their baby. I have to remember
yeah.
that. But I like the character, per se, as a somewhat villain, you know what I mean? But so that was kind of a
yeah.
surprise. And we learn more about, too, the history, Doc's history. With the Clantons, how he shot first because Wyatt told him to.
But he
so
didn't.
Basically, yeah, but I know,
he,
but I'm saying
he,
that he's basically the one that started it in a way.
But he's not. He says, I did not shoot first. Like Doc says, like
oh,
Doc
right,
says that what Wyatt Earp says is not true. Like we see, I actually really enjoyed that part. I'm assuming that's not a real footage of, there was no movies. Like, I don't think that's any kind of real footage of Wyatt Earp. I don't know.
And I could be wrong.
But,
that's what the recap says, too, though. I thought that that was supposed
no.
to be true. But either way, he did a lot of things he regrets.
So what,
you know,
apparently, what
is,
from what I have read about the real Doc Holliday is that much of it was legend and was not, like, he wasn't as great a gunslinger and didn't like kill as many people as his legend became, which, you know, fine. That's the Wild West.
Yeah.
I get that. I do, you know, so, you know, it was interesting. I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see that video where, you know, Wyatt Earp's saying this stuff and he's like, oh, Doc Holliday, you know, he shot first, he started it. And then he says this thing about like, oh, I would have to like go fetch him off of whatever whore he was having sex with and retreat. Like he was talking all the smack about Doc, right? And
yeah,
Doc,
he didn't paint him in great light.
Doc has never like really disparaged Wyatt. And then, you know, so yeah, so Doc says, I did not shoot first. That's not true. And then I think he makes a comment later about like, I forget what he actually says, but he says something like, I mean, he doesn't say like I have to rethink, like the impression to me is that he's got to rethink his memory or rethink his opinion or like, you know, here he has been so, I mean, it was clear that Doc had never seen that video before, that tape before,
right,
when it was a film back in the day and didn't know, like, it was kind of sad. Like, it appears that Doc has been a better friend to Wyatt than Wyatt maybe
yeah,
has been to Doc.
Yeah, I think maybe he didn't. It sounds to me like Wyatt kind of, I don't want to say talked him into it, but Wyatt, you know, let him think maybe that he was, I don't know, I kind of got the opinion that maybe, like, Wyatt made it seem like they had done something more than they had or whatever. And I don't know for sure. That's just kind of the opinion I got out of it. But,
I don't know,
yeah,
the,
definitely
the question,
doesn't make him look so great.
The question for me that remains to me, and maybe you, maybe this is not known, or maybe I just didn't get it and you can tell me. Doc says, no, it's not true. I didn't shoot first. But I'm not sure, does that mean that it was Wyatt who shot first or that the Clantons shot first? I always thought
I
the Clantons shot first
Clantons,
historically.
But I think
yeah.
He didn't say he didn't do it. He just didn't say that because I assumed he was sort of felt guilty about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering. But
no, I just watched it. I just watched it like 5 hours
ago.
No,
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I must be misremembering it then. But But I guess the point is that I don't think he realized. I kind of got the opinion that maybe he thought Wyatt thought higher of him than he did, and he like let him think that. And then when he's not around, he's kind of like, you know, oh, he just does what I say type of thing, you know. Like you said, he was definitely a better friend of Wyatt.
Well,
that's the opinion
that,
I get.
Well, that they were best friends, and then it turns out that like Wyatt is like talking all this shit just
right,
like, for what
right.
like to make like Wyatt is saying bad stuff about Doc, running Doc down to make himself look better, right?
Right.
Yeah, not cool.
Yeah.
I that was pretty interesting to me, and you know, Wynonna was kind of interested, but. But not as, I mean, granted, Doc knew this person in real life, and Wynonna never did, right? So,
right. So her ancestor, though, you think she'd care a little bit more, but just saying.
Well, and the person who, like, cursed her, right?
Yeah, that too.
And all that, yeah. But I really, I thought that was a neat little touch. I liked that. They really have not, like, dwelt, like, it was all kind of funny. Like, we talked a little about the history last week, and I mentioned, like, you know, we had to Google the history, and the show has not really touched on history that much. And then all of a sudden this week, Wynonna's like, who knew there was a museum in the Ghost River Triangle? And,
yeah, I know.
And they go in and like, there's all this, you know, and Ruthie's picture and like,
yeah,
that's hilarious. It was good though. I it was a kind of a Waverly-ish moment. Certainly Waverly must have known it was there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But hopefully this means she's getting closer to, because she does go to get Peacemaker, but it doesn't come to her.
Yeah, so that whole part was interesting also, right? With those weird nuns and you know what I thought of? You know what I really thought of when she went to the nuns and they opened that big room and they're like, I thought of the Room of Requirement in Harry Potter. Like, Wynonna basically goes into the Room of Requirement, right? Like, where every Hogwarts student has hidden every piece of contraband for the last 100 years.
Yeah, that is, with all the weapons, you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
But at this point, it doesn't listen to her. So that's why they go after Rosita to try to find the woman scorned and see what they can do about it.
What'd you think about her being, like, the woman? So, I didn't hate her as a character. I mean, she, you know, okay, she was, like, with Doc.
I
like
her
until
she's screwed him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I
mean, even though
she
you know, she kind of was Doc's girlfriend for a while, right? She, like,
well, yeah,
you know, was Winona's rival or whatever. And then, you know, when she tries to get the baby and everything, so that's bad. But it surprised me because I just thought the woman scorned. Like, I didn't expect it to be
I
thought it would be somebody new, right? And I didn't expect it to be, like, such a recent and minor character, really, right? Like, I mean, I guess she is scorned in the sense, there is a sense in which Doc scorned her for Winona, right? Like, there's a way in which Rosita could feel like a woman scorned, but I just felt like there would be some larger historical significance than just, like, Rosita.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they chose her. I mean, I was definitely surprised and hadn't been thinking along that track. But I just kind of, I liked it that they brought somebody back. But, it's kind of, it was definitely surprising with the way they did it. But, you know, we'll at least get a little bit more of that next time. So,
yeah.
And then I think the other big thing is Nicole ties Waverly or handcuffs Waverly to the bed, but then Waverly comes out and they're, like, drowning her, which she's not too happy about, and that's kind of where it ends. Deadly's doing his chant, so they're trying to find cure.
I have a couple issues there. So I do think it all totally makes sense, right? Although I do think they could have tried to make a second pot of soup, like, right? The soup, the ingredients were, like, onions, leeks, and basil or whatever, right? And they don't try to make another pot of soup. I guess they've gone to that other solution we heard, which was, like, drown her in a bath of salted holy water was one of the solutions also,
something
right?
Like that. Yeah.
So I guess that's what they're doing. I'm not surprised they went there. I continue every week to complain that I just don't really, to me, Nicole's, like, decision is not supported by, like, we didn't, like, it. So it appears that what Nicole, I had to infer this, you've watched ahead, right? Have you watched ahead?
Yeah. I've
no.
Seen the next.
Okay. The next one, but you haven't seen anything past that because they weren't available, right?
Right.
So it appears that you know, after everybody was gone for a year and a half and Nicole was so lonely, blah, 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 she finally goes to the Clantons and makes a deal. And it looks like, to me, like, what she agreed to do was she agreed to kill Winona in order to get Waverly back. I think that is what the deal was that she made. We don't know. We don't know. But
okay,
that's
I was
going to
say, I guess we don't
episode.
Know yet, so I don't want to say anything, because that's not how I
we don't know yet.
When I first watched it, but you don't know the answer, so I won't tell you.
I don't know, but from this episode, when Mrs. Clanton whispers in her ear and Nicole's like, I can't do that, and she's like, okay, I'll do it, and now she appears to be trying to kill Winona.
Either way, she's attacking everybody and can't tell anybody what's wrong. So.
All right, but here's the thing. To me, that's not believable. Like, I just don't see Nicole being that person that would say, yes, I'll kill my friend, my best friend, allegedly, or anyone. Like, Nicole, and you know, I complain repeatedly that it's just not supported for me that Waverly being gone for a year and a half, that Nicole would get to this point that she would make a deal with a horrible revenant to kill people. It's just not Nicole, I think. And it's also like, I guess to me, if I had... To
it
me, if I had one,
once you
so,
see what happened, because you're,
I,
I'm not
if
saying
I,
if you're necessarily right or not.
No,
but
if I had been able to see what Nicole, like, also Nicole was with. Okay, so also Rachel is the worst character ever. Like, why is Rachel even on the show? Like, I don't understand what Rachel adds. And to me,
I like
it's
her,
even
but I kind of agree with that. She just was there in order to get.
I don't dislike the actress
in the story.
Okay, the Clams could be in it without her. Like,
that's
all
what
she
I mean.
Did
I mean,
entire,
that was the whole point.
All she did this entire episode was call her boyfriend and follow his phone. That's the only thing she did in this entire episode, right?
No, you're right.
And then nothing happened, but she sees Billy, who's like a demon, and you know, she can't see him because he's not after her or whatever. I don't know who he's after if he can't see her. But anyway, like, she was with Nicole for a year and a half, which is also, like, unexplained to me. And... I continue to struggle with Nicole being in the emotional place she came to a year and a half ago and where she is right now. And I struggle with the idea that she had made this kind of horrible supernatural bargain to have Waverly back. It certainly, if
if what I'm theorizing is correct and that Nicole said, yes, I'll kill Wynonna to have Waverly, Waverly can never forgive that. Can Waverly really forgive that?
Right. Well, all I will say is, you know, you have a theory that may or may not be true. But what it ends up being makes sense. I'll just say it that way because I don't want to give anything away.
So now you're saying it's revealed next week what she did? What the deal was.
It's a mid-season finale, so we'll learn more about it, yeah. I'll just say that. I don't want to
–
I'm trying to be careful.
Well, whatever she did, it's so shameful that she can't even speak. It's very, very – like, I just don't – like, Waverly, who is so – I mean, Waverly's kind of annoying in the way she's all pure goodness and light, and everyone loves her, and everyone's so, like, this whole show, really, while it's called Wynonna Earp, I feel like really Waverly is the center of the show, because every single person on the show,
in
the last, like, 2 years or more, really, everyone is devoted to, Bobo was devoted to Waverly, Nicole, Wynonna, you know, Doc to a certain extent, like everyone is like, just loves her and is devoted to her. I mean, granted she's half angel. So I guess you're going to be like, you know, like it explains why she's so good. But anyway, that's my quibble. And also like wasting time on Rachel who like offers nothing, like contributes no real value to the story.
Yeah, I said I kind of agree with that. I do like Rachel. I do. I think she's an interesting character, but you're right. They haven't given her enough story, I guess.
For being in the show.
Right. Because that's what I said. It was sort of like it was all like it was in service of the different parts of the story, and now she mostly was there in order for them to get to Billy. But I'm curious to kind of see where they go with her.
Yeah, I think there are ways to introduce the clans without having to introduce an entire new character, like from the season premiere, to waste my time just so she can like a boy who is the entry point. Like I feel there might have been ways to introduce that. It's like,
right.
Unless
well,
she's going to play a huge role.
More. Yeah,
because
hopefully she has more to do later. I have no clue.
Well, the whole first couple of episodes also have no point. Like, this Valdez business and these zombies and everything. Apparently, the whole point of it was just to introduce Rachel so that she could introduce Billy.
Very convoluted. That's what I said before. I thought at first that the zombies were the Clanton monster things. And that's where I think I got confused. Because I said their effects kind of look the same. I had thought at the beginning, that was what I meant. I had thought at the beginning that it was part the same creature, but I don't think it is. I just, that was kind of my own connection because the effects look, or the makeup looks kind of the same.
Yeah,
but
it's like they got a deal on white makeup.
Maybe. Yeah, because that does kind of seem strange, I guess, to me. Like, I thought they were going to be a bigger character, you know, like they seemed like they were going to be. Now, that's not to say they may not come back. We don't know. But, you know, we really don't know a lot. And I think it depends, you know, what happens the rest of the season. And I'm not sure how many things were, you know, things might have been changed because of filming. I have no idea. But,
And also where they go with Black Badge. Like, while what we're seeing of Black Badge is a bunch of, like, incompetent government bureaucrats, like, it's possible that the higher levels of Black Badge are still competent and going to show up, right?
That would make sense. And I did ask Tim what you said, too. I asked him that question, which he said I wasn't wrong, so you'll have to listen. But, and I will mention
which question?
Vampire?
Oh, yeah, about Doc being
a
vampire,
But, yeah, so if anybody wants to read my interview with Tim Rosen, the whole video is up. It's, like, I think 18 minutes or something. That interview is
awesome.
Is up for people to watch. So
I didn't watch it. I saw your post. I didn't watch it yet, but I'm going to tomorrow.
I actually got to ask a lot of the questions people sent in. I got good questions this time. So,
good.
I asked quite a few. But it was a really good interview. I'm glad he did that, and I'm glad he agreed to do the video because I think that made it more fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
People can watch. All right.
Good.
Well, I think the rest, you know, like I said, you'll have to wait to the mid-finale. I can't.
Yep.
I have to always be careful what I say so I don't reveal anything. But it makes sense.
Yeah.
I think you'll be okay. All right.
Other
than that, before I go, I would like to talk a little bit about Lucifer because I had been waiting to talk about Lucifer for, like, ever.
Is it back? Is it back on?
Yes, it started Friday. I actually tried to do the live rewatch. I mean, I had already seen it, but I tried to do the live rewatch starting at 3 a.m. I made it through 4 episodes, and then I went to bed after that. I couldn't stay up anymore since I had already seen it. But I really like it, and I enjoyed watching it even the second time. I like that there's kind of a variety of different episodes this season, because you have obviously some mythology, but also the Monster of the Week. But there's two episodes that style-wise stick out, which is the third episode, Diablo, I want to make sure I said it right, is really fun because it's basically, and I know you don't watch it, so nothing I'm saying is going to make sense, but it's basically like a meta episode and sort of making fun of the whole show. It's about this producer that, or director, maybe he was a director, I can't remember, I think he's a producer, showrunner, that's what it was, that Lucifer had given a favor, and he became a showrunner, and he basically made this show Diablo, which is pretty much a ripoff of Lucifer and Chloe's life. You know, the devil being the detective, and it's just totally making fun of it, and it's really funny. I really thought that one was good. The first two are mostly about Michael, because kind of the main plot line is this season is that Lucifer, I probably should have said first, I'm going to tell spoilers, so maybe don't listen for a couple minutes if you don't want to know, but it's all been dropped, so I think that's okay. But anyway, Michael, his twin, comes down, and he kind of, while he's in hell, he tries to take over his life and pretends to be him. And eventually Chloe does figure it out. She actually had figured it out pretty early on because she said she even noticed when he kissed her it was different. So she kind of played along for a while and shot him, which was fun. But Michael is, he's a good villain, but he's like, you just, It's one of those things where, because like people think he's him, it's kind of like, no, you don't want that to happen. But I really like that. The only thing story wise I would say with that is that I wish that Maze would not continue to betray him as much as she does, because I feel like she's always feels abandoned and everybody, you know, cares about her, and she seems to like not get that, and she needs, I think, to kind of wake up a little bit more with that. And then the fourth episode is the, I think it's the fourth one. Let me look at the episode number before I say that. Yeah, the fourth one is the episode called It Never Ends Well for the Chicken, which is a black and white episode that takes place in, oh, God, the 40s, I think. I can't believe I don't remember.
Like a noir, like a detective noir kind of thing?
Yes, detective noir, exactly. And, well, Lucifer plays himself, but everybody else plays somebody else. It's sort of like his first case, basically. And it's about Lilith, who's Maze's mother, and about her being immortal, and it kind of ties in to, 1940s, ties into what's going on with Maze in the normal time, because she finds out about her mother. And now he's got a ring, and you find out actually her mother's soul's in it. And there's some different theories on kind of what's going to happen with that. But that's what that one's about. But it's funny because he's telling a story to Trixie, who wants him to be more gender neutral. I don't know, but more fair in it. And she's like, my mother's a detective. Why can't it be a girl? So the one who plays Chloe actually plays a man in it. And Trisha Helfer's back. She plays his wife. I'm saying his because she's still playing a guy in it. And then Dan is one of the bad guys and completely crazy. And I'm going to call her Amy now. Ella is also is like a mob boss. And she talks about that too in the interview. And it's just really funny. So that one's definitely different. And then the other big things that kind of happen is episode 6, which is about a DJ. Lucifer gets very jealous of this guy, and he listens to his advice, which probably isn't good that he does that because it ends up screwing him. But in the end, he apologizes to Chloe, and they actually, which everybody's waiting for, finally get together in this episode. They sleep together at the end of the episode. And then the whole part after that is, which is funny, is Lucifer actually loses his mojo to Chloe, and she can make people reveal their desires. But, of course, this causes issues for him. And then find out after, too, he's also invincible again and invulnerable again. And Dan, and then the other big thing is Dan finds out that Lucifer is the devil. He shoots him, and so they have to deal with that. But I think kind of the big thing, and I'm getting to the end. Sorry, I'm going too long. I'm not meaning to go
slow. That's okay.
But
that's
probably,
okay. That's fine.
Yeah, but probably the part that I like the most, well, obviously is the romance part. But I really like in, I believe it's episode 5, I want to say. It's the one where Amenadiel's being the detective. But Chloe finds out because Michael told her that she is actually a miracle and how she was put there for Lucifer. And so she's upset about that for obvious reasons and thinks that, you know, she's been fated to be with him and that she doesn't have free will. And
free
they
will.
Finally explain, yeah, and they finally explain kind of about how, more about how he's been vulnerable around her because, and they had said some of this before, because the him and Amenadiel, they self-actualize. So he was physically vulnerable to her because he was willing to open up and be vulnerable. And that it actually, since she was never affected by his devil powers, Amenadiel tells her that he see the gift isn't her for him. It's actually that she's the only one that can see who she truly is, because everybody else sees their desire like reflected back on him, but what she sees is the true version of him, which is obviously really important, because the episode's about these nuns that are like in love with Amenadiel, and this one nun like grabs him and kisses him, and it's supposed to be because they see love and faith reflected back at him, and that's kind of what that episode is about, which is pretty cool. And then there's a big bad whisper killer who ends up being Ella's boyfriend, which doesn't go so great for her, obviously. But and then the other big thing is that at the end, Chloe is concerned because he still hasn't said he loved her outright. He kind of did, but he never did outright. And also that he's invulnerable now, and he does get ready right to say he loves her. And then at that time, time stops from Amenadiel, and the big ending, which I don't know, wasn't my favorite ending, but hopefully it'll be good, and it's just kind of like, because you don't know what it's going to be. Lucifer and Amenadiel are fighting against Michael and Maze, and God comes down to stop the fight. So we'll kind of see how that works out. But it's Dennis Haber. He plays God in this. But that's where it ended.
Dennis Haber plays God? That's awesome.
Yeah, that part's awesome. I just don't know. That's kind of like a big thing to bring to the show. We'll have to see how it works. But
An
episode called Family Dinner or something next the end of the season, so we'll see. But the other, that's only the first 8, so the rest is coming soon. But,
what is it, like episode 5, season 5 of this show, right? What a season is it?
Yeah.
This show's been a while now.
5, yeah. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to say, I just suddenly remembered, one of the things, and this is all in my review too, but one of the things I really liked about this season is, during the other seasons, all the cases, Lucifer always, and granted he's more selfish at the beginning of the show, but he always puts himself in the cases, and like that's what he sees, what's important to him is how it relates to him. And this season it's kind of the opposite, because a lot of it's about Chloe, since he is gone at the beginning in hell, at the beginning of the season. So I like that. But that review is up, and my interview with Amy is also up that people can read, who plays Ella. And she talked about some of the stuff that I went over. So, all right. Well, that's about it. That's my rundown. So people should watch that. And like I said to you, it is a lot it is sort of case of the week, but it does have a story behind it. And I don't know. I really like it. I've said before, I didn't think at the beginning I would, because it was about the devil being good. But he's like a fallen angel here. It's just you kind of look at it like a different story. But I think it's really fun.
Well, I mean, I watched a little of the first season, and it wasn't really about the devil being good.
No,
right?
It's
like
not.
In the first season, it was about the devil.
I mean,
it was about the devil being bored, kind of, in the
true.
Beginning, right?
Right. But a lot of it is about
but
that
then
he is
he
a
found
fallen angel.
A woman,
that she changes him
mm-hmm.
and makes him.
I mean,
want
the
to
devil
be
is
good.
A fallen angel, so maybe does he have the capacity for good still? Yeah.
Right. And he's still a smartass through a lot of it regardless. But no, but
that
I think it's funny.
Really, that guy is really, really good looking.
Yes, he is. And he plays his twin in this one, too. So even more Tom Ellis. and
nice.
They get him with an American accent, which is very strange. But yeah. And I really like it. And we don't get quite as much music this time. We get a little bit of singing from him. And also, Tom had tweeted, I retweeted it, I should have, that a soundtrack is available that has it has some of Leslie Ann Brandt on it too, but it's mostly him on piano singing because he really sings in it.
Hmm.
So he's a good singer. But yeah, I think it's a fun show. I mean, it's sometimes doesn't take itself too seriously, but other times it does. But I don't know. Like I said, I had got the screeners. I mean, I read for whatever reason when rewatched it before it came back because I wanted to rewatch it, and I don't know, liked it, not that I didn't like the first time, I loved it, but this time I liked it 10 times more and became obsessed with it. And then I got the screeners and I watched them. I got them pretty much right after my grandma's funeral, and I don't know, watching it, it's a funny show at times, and I don't know, it just really helped, and I enjoyed it and was glad I got to see it, and I think it's a really good show. So the end.
Great.
All right. Well,
all right.
The only other thing I do want to mention, and I actually looked
up
the date this time, is I'm also going to be covering the HBO Max show called Raised by Wolves, which is out September 3rd. And it's about children that are raised on another planet by androids. And then the humans come back to take children away. It looks really good. There's some trailers that have been out, but that's
what could possibly go wrong
show.
With robots
yeah.
raising children,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess they raise them. The previous is they raise them atheists too, and then the humans come back, and they're like, it sounds like maybe they stole their children. I don't really know because I haven't seen it yet. I got to watch the screeners. I just got them, but it looks from the previews really good, and it's directed by Ridley Scott, and it's starring Travis Fimmel. Is the main guy in it. So, yeah.
All
it
right.
looks good.
Okay.
And that's on, like I said, that's on HBO Max. That's on the streaming service. So, all right.
Okay.
Well.
All right, cool.
I guess I'm about out of stuff then that I've seen. I did not see. Did you guys both watch Lovecraft County? I have not.
I've seen episode one.
Yes.
AJ have seen two. I've seen one.
I saw both of them.
I'm curious what you guys thought. I don't want to know super big spoilers, but what did you think about it?
Let me just put it this way, Jamie. I've seen both episodes. You'll enjoy it and go watch it.
I'll enjoy it and watch it. Okay.
Yeah, I think, quickly, AJ and I are talking about it quickly. I think, it starts out, the first hour starts out almost seeming like one show, and then it's another show, right? Like, it's a show that is interesting in the way it combines, the experience of Black people in America in the 50s, and then there's, a whole, science fiction-like element.
That's what I was gonna say, there's a sci-fi horror element, right? Yeah.
It's really more horror, probably, than sci-fi so far, in one episode, I can tell. But it's HBO. It's really well done. It's really high production values. It's really, and a little unexpected, I think. So, I think you should watch it, catch up with it if you can, and we can all talk about it.
Yeah. I did want to see it. I just haven't gotten far yet.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
okay.
You guys have, what else do you have to talk about? Just that?
That's it. Just Lovecraft. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then you guys
talk
about that for a little bit, and I'll chime in more on it next week. Oh, I was going to say, maybe you want to say so people know, I might get it too, I haven't decided yet, but you said that Orphan Black cereal book is on sale.
Orphan Black is on Cereal Box. Through August 31st, they have a 30% off. There's a code, which they'll get, I mean, it's not a secret code for me, it's for everyone, it's Lita 30 code, but... If you go on there, it's so you can get the whole season for only $6.99. And you don't have to listen to the audiobook. You can just read it also. You can either read or listen, depending on how you
like
it.
Although I suggest, having done both, Because I would listen to it, then read it, a chapter at a time. I suggest you listen to it if you're only going to do one, because you get to hear her do the different voices. And
you get to hear Tatiana also, do all the clones,
One who play, I can't think of his name, I'm blanking, but the one that plays her brother is at the very end, too. I think the epilogue. But anyway, really good.
Jordan, the guy who plays Jordan,
Yeah, but it's really good, and it's about people finding out there's clones, which I never thought would happen. So it's surprising, but it's really good, and it brings in some new clones. And I hope
for $6.99.
Yeah, I hope they do another season. Whether they will, I don't know.
So it's on Serial Box if anyone's listening.
Yeah. Serialized show.
Like Serial. Yeah. Serialbox.com.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Okay.
Have fun. I will talk to you guys later.
Have a good week. Okay, have a good week. Bye.
Bye, Jamie.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so, AJ, I could only watch one episode of Lovecraft before tonight.
So just refresh, because I watched them back-to-back. Refresh my memory. How did the first episode end so I don't go too far?
The first episode ends, we'll go back a little bit. The first episode, they wake up in the mansion, and we're treated to, like, a Jeffersons dance marathon.
Yes.
That's how the next episode ends. The first episode ends when they come to the mansion and that blonde Draco Malfoy guy opens the door and says, "Welcome home, Mister. We've been waiting for you." That's how it ends.
Freeman, Okay.
Yeah. Welcome home, Mister Freeman. Yeah, that's how it ends.
Okay. So I felt the first episode, I thought they focused, which was a good thing. I think they did a good job of establishing our main three characters. And, you know, I got to say, you know, they don't give us a specific year. They just kind of, like, generalize in the 50s. And I'll tell you what, I've never wanted to shoot so many white people in my life.
You
know, especially with what we're, you know, this is going to sound maybe wrong, but I swear to God, I almost feel like it was better in the 50s than it is now, because everybody's so closeted nowadays with racism. At least in the 50s, you knew what you were getting yourself into, and you knew what people thought of, and you knew how it was, you know? Whereas now, it's like everything is coming out of the woodwork. And it's just, it's ridiculous. You know, it's like, we haven't progressed at all. And, you know, you had mentioned that, The Watchmen had dealt with racism also on the show. And, you know, this is a very bold move by JJ, and Key to jointly do, you know, something like this that focuses on something that is very prominent in our country right now, unfortunately. And I just, you know, I'm watching this, and it sickens me what the 50s were like as far as, you know, the character side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't even meet Atticus and his father, but just him talking about him and everything, and the way he treated him, you know, him going off to war for a country that hated him was, you know, something he said his father had said. You know, obviously neither one of us were around, you know, for that in the 50s. So I think they did a great job, because I felt like I was there, and I was pissed off for African Americans in those scenes where the white people were just awful, especially at the diner, which apparently used to be owned by somebody who didn't mind black people dining.
Oh, apparently they burned her. They burned her out and maybe killed her. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think you're. So I mean, I'm not. So I'm a white person, and so I don't really know what it's like, and I don't have family members telling me what it was like. Like, you know, it's funny. My parents are from New York City. They were born in the New York into the 1930s, raised in New York City. And my mother told me that she never saw like a colored only water fountain in her entire life, because New York City did not have
that, although she could be wrong. My mother just lived in, like, the Irish part of Manhattan, and maybe they just didn't have it because there were no black. I don't really know, right? My mother told me she never really saw those kinds of Jim Crow things happening in New York City. So I don't have, like, I'm sure there are black people in America who have grown up with family members telling them stories about this kind of stuff, right? It's probably only news to people like us, not to maybe black people, that this is what it was like in the 50s. But it, I agree with you that it seemed really, I mean, it was infuriating and sad. And, you know, the idea that these people are just trying to go about their business and you know, it's interesting that they chose to make this, like, they're traveling across country and the uncle, they've given the uncle a job of writing the Green Book. By the way, did you see the movie The Green Book?
No, I didn't.
I saw it, and, you know, it was really, it won Best Picture, I think, right? And it was a good movie, but it really is sort of about a white man's experience of driving across the country using the Green Book. And, you know, this is a little bit, it's interesting that they chose this job for Uncle George, and I wonder if it will play out more, if they're going to travel more, or are we going to see the rest of the season just be in Massachusetts now? I'm not really sure, but yeah, it was interesting that it's almost like you're watching a show in this first episode that's more really about racism in America, and then it has this, like, horror thing totally overlaid on top of it. And I don't know what we're going to see going forward, but, like it's hard enough to deal with monsters without also all the white people trying to kill you, right?
Yeah.
Like, or are the white, I mean, obviously it's an allegory, like, are the white people, who's the monster here? I mean, it's not because, so apparently I've not read H.P. Lovecraft. I'm not familiar with his work, but I understand from reading about the show and some Googling about him that he was a terrible racist and a classist. And had a lot of kind of ideas that we consider repugnant today. And he would not have written a story probably that was sympathetic to black people, but someone has written this story and it, like, who's the monster? Like the thing with a million eyes or the horrible sheriff who just wants to kill black people, right? Like on its, there's on its most basic level, that's what the show is saying to us. But there's, like, layers about this that we haven't even gone into yet, I'm sure. And it's,
yeah.
It kind of was interesting to me at the very end of the episode. So it's interesting to me, like, so in the first, when they leave the diner and they're being pursued by those horrible white rednecks who are trying to shoot them, and that silver car comes out and causes the car wreck. And then a beautiful blonde white woman steps out, right? And I was like, oh, she's demon, is she the devil? But later at the end, when they get to the mansion and the blonde white man opens the door and says, we've been waiting for you. You know, it was interesting to me that it seems like the family connection is, I mean, it's not... Atticus's mother's people come from this area, and I don't know if these people are related or not, but it seems like whatever is going on here is not, like, it's not just the black part of his family, right? Like, we're not finding, like, that, like, I don't know, the good witches or whoever they are, the bad witches, the demons, they're not black. Like, it was a little interesting to me. I mean, I guess we know that there was always intermingling of races throughout history, back to the founding fathers and even before, right? But I don't know. But I guess also people with, like, maybe I call them Draco Malfoy. Maybe I just feel like people with, like, weird bleached blonde hair like that are definitely demons. Blonde people are demons for sure, right?
Well, you saw that when they got to Ardon, that silver Bentley was parked in the driveway.
Yeah, yeah.
The one that she was driving, yeah. And did you catch the fact that that truck flipped over the car without actually hitting the car?
Yes, that Bentley, it's a Bentley or a roll, it's a Bentley? It spins
Bentley.
Around, right? It spins around, and the truck like, never hits the car. It just, it's almost like it hit a force field right in front of the car and flipped over it. Right? That car is undamaged, untouched.
Yeah, I caught that immediately and paused it and went back to, and I watched it with Artie, and I said to him, I said, that's either really bad special effects or that's intentional. And he didn't even catch the fact that the truck didn't actually hit the car because it happened so quick. I just happened to catch it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of, I think that, it was intentional that they did it and they filmed it in such a way that you might not, that you might miss it, which I thought was pretty well done. I highly doubt that between JJ and T that they would miss something that obvious in the editing.
Right.
So it's gotta be obvious.
And HBO, spends money on effects, right? They're not gonna have cheapo effects on HBO.
Is ironic because the monsters were kind of interesting. It's funny, like, it kind of, basically the first 45 minutes of this episode is very character-driven, dealing with the racism in the 50s, and then all of a sudden we have monsters. And it didn't pull me out, but it almost kind of seemed comical because you've got this really bad redneck racist cop who wants, who's basically, he's toying with them, he's like, oh, I could arrest you if it was nighttime for pissing in the trees, like an animal, and he's like, they're trying to get out of the county, and then turns out, they've got a roadblock up ahead, he's just toying with them and everything, and then to see, it happen with, they basically get saved by monsters, and then the whole scene in the cabin with the sheriff and the other guy, the other deputy.
How was he?
How is he not dead with his arm missing?
Yeah, how is he not dead? I kept trying to get a good look at his arm that was, I'm like, wait, is his arm bitten off or is it just chewed? And I'm like, was it almost cauterized when they bit it? Like, how is he just not bleeding out and dying right now? I was like, what?
Yeah, I kind of wanted the same thing.
But maybe it's because he was turning into one of them. I mean, I love the way George and Atticus were like, they're like vampires. They don't like the light. Oh, so when you get bitten by a vampire, like they're like the audience, like walking us through it in a little bit of a almost comedic fashion. I thought it was really great. I think they're a great threesome. I like our three lead, our lead trio a lot. I know they all work a lot. I've never really, I'm not fully familiar with any of their work that much, which is great to me. Like they're three, it's not like they put three, they're three known actors, but they're not like blockbuster actors that like to me. Right.
You're saying like,
okay,
it's not a Tom Cruise, it's not like Morgan Freeman or Denzel Washington playing.
Or other shows where they put in a major actor in the first episode who probably gets eaten shortly, right? Like, I worry about Courtney B. Vance. He might not make it. But and Jeremy Smollett in particular, I'm not familiar with. But, I've heard of her.
Because I made a comment to Artie during the monster scene. I was not worried about the uncle dying. I said, of course, you don't kill him in the first episode.
But it's happened. Remember when we watched Z Nation because Harold Perrineau was on it and he got killed in the first episode?
I had no intention.
I fell for it. I fell for it. Anyway, I think they have good chemistry. The three of them, I think they, get along well. I like the way Atticus and Letitia are not like thrown at us immediately as a romantic couple. Like they're high school friends, and like, is he a little bit like I feel like the dynamic is that he's the nerdy science fiction boy and she's a hot girl, and he's always going to be a little, like, stuttery and, like, but they're not, like, immediately thrown at us as, like...
Yeah. And, well, she was kind
of... She was in the science fiction club, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like that they're not...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like that they're making it more like we're giving her a ride to our old... I just like the way they've worked that out between the three of them. I think it really kind of fits. It's a little bit of a surprise to have, like, the older uncle along. Usually, if this was going to be, like, a bad horror movie, it would have three people of the same age, right? I like having sort of the... I just think it works right now, the three of them. I like it. I mean, I only saw the first episode. I haven't seen the second one. I don't really have much to criticize in the first episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you and I both kind of work the same way with TV shows. You know, we'll be intrigued by something. We'll watch the first episode. And then I'd say 80% of the time we're kind of like, it was decent. You know, I'll see where it goes, everything. I'm hooked after I was hooked after the first episode, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of the first episode, Artie and I kind of looked at each other, and we were both like, that was crazy. Let's watch the next one.
Yeah, and I really liked that it was not witches, it was monsters. Like, I just felt like they were all this talk of Salem and, like, Massachusetts, like, and which they were setting it up to witches, but, like, I don't read Lovecraft, but I know that Lovecraft is more about monsters and also about, like, space, like humanity's place in the universe is a big theme of Lovecraft's work. And Cthulhu, right? He created Cthulhu, and certainly we'd expect that, right? But I like that it was monsters. Yeah, little, like, Draco Sr., the Draco twins, they look like witches, and it appears that someone whistled and called the eyeball monsters away, like, right? It's almost like they were dogs listening to a whistle and, like, running off. And they may have some sway, and there could be some witchcraft, but I felt like, oh, monsters. Like, this is straight up horror. I like this. Yeah, I'm into it. I'm kind of into a monster story that is blending in racism just as, like, a fact of their life, right? Like, you can't, like, it's legit that you couldn't have a story about black people driving from Chicago to Massachusetts in the 50s without happening to them. Like, there's like, decades and decades of television where they would just drive and have a normal, like, problem-free life doing this because it was whitewashing. Whitewashing. It was, like, glossing over what reality was. And, it's realistic, probably. I mean, I guess it is. I don't know. I'm not a black person in the 50s. But, like, maybe this is how TV should be, right? Like, a realistic picture of what it was like for them just to, like, which is the worst horror story? Like, monsters, they can't help being monsters. Humans can kind of help it. Yeah, I'm into it. I don't know how many episodes it is, but I also like that they're dropping one a week. Like, I just sometimes like to watch a show once a week. Sometimes I like to binge it. Sometimes I like to wait for it. But you and I both are a little old school like that.
The whole Netflix dropping everything at once is kind of cool. And there's been times where, I was telling you that I watched Perry Mason on HBO Max during my free trial. And with that, I got hooked immediately. And I couldn't wait to see what happened next, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to wait. So at that time, I was like, damn it, why couldn't this be on Netflix? But sometimes, you know, especially when we talk about the show on the podcast, I like having only, you know, whenever we talk about a show that is from Netflix, I feel like it doesn't get the justice from us because we talk about something as a whole.
Yeah.
Whereas when we're waiting every week for the episodes to come out, we have time to process it, think about it. While we're talking about it on the show, we think of other things, you know, that happened. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and I are constantly thinking of new theories while we're talking to each other. You know, one of us says something we hadn't thought about, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah. Cast.
So.
So I'm definitely, I'm hooked. I guess we'll continue to cover this. It's nice to have a show that's not going to be interrupted. Like, this was in the can, I think, before COVID, right? And we will get all of it straight through. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm not going to say anything about the second episode, but the second episode is just as good as the first episode. And I mean, the thing I like about the show so far, the second episode doesn't hold back. It really just jumps in and keeps giving us information. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all keeps going, because it's very, I mean, they've mixed. Like, again, I'm trying not to say too much for the second episode yet since I haven't seen it, but they mix. I mean, we've got a large mixture of a lot of stuff. You know, we've got the race, and we've got the monsters, and without saying too much, we're going to have Genesis also mixed in there. It's going to be biblical stuff in the second episode.
Oh, yeah? Oh.
So,
when you said Genesis, I had a horrible flashback to Preacher, and I was like, wait, Genesis? The voice of what? And they're like, oh, no, you mean the Bible, the actual Bible. actual Genesis. All right.
Yes.
So they're just throwing it, they're not holding anything back. All right.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we finally have a show that we enjoy talking about.
Yep.
We'll do it again next week.
Yep, for sure. All right. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Same bat channel. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Karen, have a great week, and we'll do it again. Good night, everyone.
You too. Thanks, everyone. Bye.